And today I am here live and in person with Lisa DeYoung. She is an award-winning photojournalist from the Cleveland Plain Dealer here in my local market. And I'm just going to warn you up front, this is the first one we've ever done done in person. So actually today we're in a beautiful Lakewood Park in Lakewood, Ohio, on the shores of Lake Erie. And it's an absolutely perfect day. And so I got to thank Lisa for recommending this spot. So anyway, Lisa, thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, glad to do it. As I told Lisa on the phone the other day, you know, when we started the magazine, I wanted to start interviewing photojournalists, and she and some of her cohorts at our local paper were on my list. So finally got around to asking her. And personally, you know, as somebody who always wants to get better at photography, I spent a lot of time looking at the work of our photographers in our local newspaper, because they're all so good. And they do some really amazing work. So it was, you know, it's great to actually be able to meet one of them in person. And I encourage you to do that as well. If you do have a newspaper, start studying their work. These guys work very hard and take a lot of photos. So, Lisa, I always like to start just to get a little bit of your background. So if you can just tell us, you know, like, where are you from? How you got into this business? Mm-hmm. And anything that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. What brought you here?
Well, I moved all around as a kid. I think that's sort of what prepared me to do what I do today, sort of always the new kid in school. And so that kind of set me up to be a very observant type of person, sort of not one to walk into a room and command a room, but sort of to sit back and just observe, because I was such a shy kid. So I think that really was great training for me to be, you know, sort of a patient observer. So, you know, and that I think is, I think I'm very lucky, because it's sort of what I was meant to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna follow up on some of that. Well, so how'd you become a photographer? I mean, did you go to school for it? Did you just learn it on your own and decide that's what you tell me?
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember one day telling my mother, I was in college, I was studying to be a physical therapist, and found out that I was really bad at math. So so there was plan B. So, and I remember telling my mother that I'd really like to be a photographer. And she said, well, Lisa, have you ever really taken pictures? I said, no. But it's one of those things that you just know that you'd be interested in. And so I took one class in college, and then actually worked on, you know, this college paper. And I was off, you know. It was a way for me to do art in the real world. As a kid, moving around a lot, I was really an expert at disappearing. And I think I am still good at disappearing. So I think when I go into a situation, it's not long before people just forget I'm there. And that's really, you know, as a journalist, that's really the only way you can kind of do your work. You know, I think sometimes people think I'm, you know, ultra quiet, but I sort of have to let things happen on their own, you know. So, and some people are better at that than others, I think, but I have to be sort of disengaged to let things kind of naturally happen. So,
well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, because if you're the life of the party, then things aren't going to happen around you. They're going to happen with you.
Yeah, right.
And you can't be that. Is it?
That's right. I don't want to take self-portraits with me with other people. But so.
Selfies with the photographer.
Yeah, right.
So where'd you go to school?
You know, I went to Michigan State University, actually.
Michigan State, yeah. MSU.
MSU. They had a very good journalism program there. And a lot of people that I came up with are have since left the business, but are still on the periphery of the business. But boy, was that a good experience for me.
So Michigan State, when my sister went to college, she came home with the MSU game, it was called. But she didn't go there.
Oh, really?
Okay. But she had the MSU game. It was a drinking game. It's like every time you land on a square, you have to take a drink of beer.
Oh, really? Oh, gosh.
They must have that kind of reputation. So I'm sure they just rebranded that for every college around, but she had the MSU version.
Well, it's funny. We do that with our colleagues. Like, whenever we see them at a game, a Browns game or something, we see them on the sidelines, we're like, ah, drink, we see Chuck. You know, it's our own drinking game, but.
But you don't really do it, though.
No, oh, no.
You're working?
No. Yeah, right.
I see. So so you did that. I mean, so you wound up actually majoring in journalism or photojournalism?
I did, and sort of a minor in art history.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I found journalism as a way to actually get a job, which I felt was more art than journalism. So it was a way for me to take pictures. It was a way for me to take pictures and, you know, get paid for doing it, actually. So... and hopefully I can still do that in the years to come. So.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. I think the newspapers are very important to have, you know, like you said, whether they print them or not. But personally, I think we all need to consume content that's curated in some way. If you're always just chasing down the things you're interested in, you're never going to learn about corrupt county commissioners or the fact that the highway that you take to work is going to be closed tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, you need that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of that goes away. A lot of people, I think, become ignorant of what's going on around them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel that newspapers are a public service. I mean, and you're right, I think as more people... just go to the internet, they are only looking up things that they themselves are interested in. So you need to be exposed to your community. You need to know things about your community, like in neighborhoods that you will never go to. Like, you need to, that's the only way you will know those people in that neighborhood, because you'll never go to that neighborhood. So a newspaper is something that we can all get to know each other. And as that sort of goes away, it's troubling. It's troubling. And the trajectory of the newspaper business in the last 5 years has been so stunning to me the disappearance of a community kind of watchdog. It's depressing, and it's a scary. I wonder what it's going to be in 5 years.
Yeah, because I think about our own community. We're here in Cleveland, Ohio, and the newspaper that Lisa works for several years ago broke a story about a county commissioner who was basically like Boss Hog. I mean, he ran the entire Democratic machine. And they just kept on it, and they kept on this guy, and you know, if it wasn't for the work that you folks did, we'd probably still have these people running around controlling millions and millions of dollars for their own benefit, because
mm-hmm.
it wasn't in anybody's self-interest to expose that.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew about it?
Mm-hmm. And who else is going to do that?
Yeah.
Who else is going to do that? Now we have less people to do those kinds of stories. And it's troubling. All of a sudden, newspapers have become a business where it never felt like a business before. It felt like a community service.
Yeah.
So it's troubling. We're hanging on like the Titanic, it feels like, some days.
Yeah, because I think about, if you're only like creating your own news feed from things you're interested in, whether it's the Kardashians or it's cars or whatever, you're never going to create one that about county government. I mean, how boring is that? That's about as boring as it gets. But these people control a big part of your life and lots of money, and so it's in the dark. It's real easy for them to get away with things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where, the press shines a light.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Shines a light on it.
Mm-hmm. What's his name? Jimmy DeMora, right?
DeMora. We can use his name. He's in prison.
Right, he's in prison now.
I mean, most of you folks could care less about it. But it's true for any community anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's, so things are really changing in the... in that business, and it affects photographers, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think about the story about the Chicago Sun-Times, mm-hmm. where they let all the photographers go and gave the reporters iPhones. Great camera outside.
Yeah,
but
it's
not
a great camera for football games.
No,
I would think.
Not really.
Or war zones, or
yeah.
Yeah, and that happened right before we had some layoffs at the Plain Dealer. So, indeed, we were very nervous because photo departments are an expensive department. What was troubling is that they thought that visual journalists are somehow lesser journalists or... that anybody with an iPhone can do just as well. And they found out that it really wasn't the case and how valuable photography is to a newspaper report. I think nationwide that was a real point in time that we're thinking, wow, can they really do that to a whole department, a major metropolitan newspaper? And you bet we were nervous.
I bet. But, you think about it. As newspapers move more and more, online on the tablet or computer or whatever, you'd think the visual aspect would be even more important just to capture people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And a photo that's created by somebody who knows what they're doing is much more compelling than one that's captured by some guy walking down the street with an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Some people get lucky, but...
some people.
So it sounds like basically you've spent most of your career as a photojournalist. So where have you worked? What have you done? I know you've been in our market for, 7, 8 years now. What led you to come here? What other places have you worked?
Well, I got my start. I did a number of internships, like 5 internships around the country, which is such a great, which a lot of internships don't exist anymore. So it's very difficult for kids to really get thrown into a real newspaper situation, which is what they do when you have an internship. So I started at small papers, the Muskegon Chronicle,
mm-hmm.
in Muskegon, Michigan, which is just still my favorite paper. Wonderful paper. The photo use was just incredible. Their community involvement was incredible. I was very lucky. I interned there and then later on got a job there. And that was right on Lake Michigan. But very... lots of photo stories, very in-depth community, small town photo stories, which mattered. I, even at this paper, I'm not going to be sent to Iraq. I won't be sent to Africa. I'll be sent 50 miles to the county border, but it matters. It matters to your community because that's how we explain ourselves to each other. And so Muskegon was such a great training ground to really look in depth in your local community. And from there, I went to a larger paper, like three times as large to the St. Petersburg Times,
mm-hmm.
And was there for a few years, which was a great, incredible paper. Very wonderful, vivid writers that we could work with. And then after that, after spending another 100 degree summer there, I moved back to Michigan. Worked at the Flint Journal, again another great local paper. And I'm sort of attracted to cities that have a hard time. That its guts are just hanging out for everyone to see. They have nothing to hide. They are just, here we are, And there are so many stories in your own backyard. And I think that's what I've sort of always been interested in. I'm not interested in, big events at the queue. I'm more interested in, what happens in basement churches or something, So I'm very attracted to sort of Rust Belt cities that are actually beautiful to me. Everything was so shiny and sunny in Florida. It sort of threw me off a little bit. I like cities that are struggling. It's visually beautiful to me. I don't know. I think it attracts a lot of artists, actually. A lot of visual people. I mean, to see the steel mills that mm-hmm. I get excited about. It's
fascinating.
It's fascinating. And the people that, the ethnic groups here in Cleveland are so interesting to me. And I'm very lucky. And people are just like, what? You're moving to Cleveland? It's like, well, why not? It's really a fascinating place to me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think it is too. I am getting tired of the winters, but other than that, it's great.
We are very close to Canada.
We are. As a matter of fact, the Canadian wind is blowing against my back as we speak.
That's
you can
right.
probably hear the wind and the birds on this recording, but that's just part of the charm of doing it this way.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's interesting. You talk about photo stories. You did one, probably a month or so ago, and you took a bunch of photos of all these close-ups of some of the local architecture. Our city has some very interesting old buildings. So you had all these photos of, like, gargoyles, and, guess where these came from? Do you remember doing that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. It was sort of an interactive thing.
Yeah.
The paradox of things that we see every day are invisible to us. And in Cleveland just has so much downtown that we take for granted, including
yep.
the architecture.
Yep.
So I don't know how many people passed the test.
I tried. I got a couple of them.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. More than probably I would have gotten, but that is fun. That was fun to do.
So what kind of, as a working photojournalist, what kind of things do you work on? I know there's a number of photographers on the staff. I'm sure you're broken up into different assignments and duties. And what's your principal job?
Yeah, a lot of us at the paper were ready to do the whole spectrum of whatever. There's definitely some people who gravitate to certain beats, if you say, a lot of the guys like to do a lot of the sports and the Browns, and other people like to do longer-term stories, which I sort of tend to gravitate to. So I'm sort of gravitated to, the longer-term stories. But I also like, I find a respite in doing sort of featurey
mm-hmm.
type things. Like, I love to do fashion shoots. I love to do in-studio work. So almost anything. I will take pictures of anything and just absolutely love it.
So... I know when you you know, when you work for a paper, you're on deadline. And do you have like a quota too? You're supposed to generate so many photos a day or a week?
You know, there's not so much a quota. I think for the writers in this whole online new world, I think there's becoming more of a quota, how many posts you do a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sort of geared toward, you know, what the stories, daily stories, are percolating that day. So there's not so much a quota. It's just how the news rolls. And our news coverage is tending to be more about news and sports, so it's mm-hmm. kind of more of the feature type long-term stories. I would say are taking a back seat now because of just this feeding this, you know, internet monster, which I think the scope of that is becoming more and more defined. News, sports. And news and sports.
News and sports. That's about it.
Yeah.
That's about it. And sports is news.
Yeah, and right.
It's on the
in this
front
town,
piece.
For yeah, sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely in this town.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, because, I mean, you got to produce, right? So, you know, if you go out on an assignment, I imagine you've got to come back with something. You've got to come back with something good in a pretty short period of time or a defined mm-hmm. period of time. That's a lot of pressure. You know, most of us amateurs, you know, we go out and we're walking on the street and shooting whatever. If we don't come back with anything, okay, maybe next time. But you have to deliver, right?
Right. And I think if you ask any photographer, that's something they've been used to for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if and I think it's great practice to see a situation and know you have to make it work.
Uh-huh.
And even if you don't feel creative that day, you got it. I mean, you have to make it work, and at a certain time.
Yeah.
So I think we've all become very good at this laser focus, if you will, about what in that situation. I mean, we will walk into a room, okay, and your mind is going a million different directions. You're talking with the person to make them feel comfortable, but you are looking at the light, and
mm-hmm.
you're looking, and usually I'm saying, oh my gosh, this is not going to work. So, but then it starts to work, and I think that's part of the problem solving part of it that I really quite enjoy. And if you just not force things and just sort of let them happen, it's amazing what. If you let magic happen, it will happen. If you don't force things, if you just let them happen organically, it's so much better than if you tell a person, you know, stand a certain way or this, which is the nature of photojournalism, you know,
mm-hmm.
how things happen naturally. So,
God, so how do you teach yourself to do that? I'm sure. Are there like three bullet points?
No,
here's the top five ways to let things happen.
Right. Well, look for a window.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
When window light is best. I think it's just by doing it, especially when you don't feel like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very indicative of any kind of artist who, you know, every day I paint for 4 hours, no matter what I feel like,
mm-hmm.
If I'm in the worst mood or whatever. I think it's just a discipline. I think, you know, work is its own cure, sort of thing.
No, that's a good point.
Just
that's a very
do
good...
it and do it and do it. I mean, there's no other way around it. You can't read about it. You can't, I mean, unless you are... working through that particular situation, nobody can tell you how to do it.
Yeah, because I guess what would terrify me is, you know, I've got to do some assignment and I go there and the light's just terrible. You know, you got this.
Like in Cleveland, yeah.
Like in Cleveland, yeah. Like today. And it's, of course, I guess it's like any problem, you just learn how to deal with it and okay, it's noon and there's no shade and
exactly.
Here's what we're going to do.
Exactly right. It's definitely a work in progress. I feel like I have so much to learn, even though I've done this for 20 years, which is unbelievable to me. But I think I sort of started taking pictures. It was sort of, looking back, sort of a selfish endeavor, mm-hmm. I guess. You know, later on, of course, realizing that, newspapers can sort of change things, which is pretty cool to kind of discover. But when I'm taking pictures, it's like, it's almost like this meditative thing. It's like I can be no one for hours and just and completely disappear. I don't know what time it is. I don't know. And that's terrific to be able to do something in life that you do not think about yourself. You don't think about your bad day. It's not about you. It's about the people that mm-hmm. you're doing a story on, or just the composition of that box. It's really stunning how the older I get, the more meditative it really becomes for me.
Wow. And you get paid for it.
Yeah, I know it. I'm so truly lucky. I really am. Really, really lucky.
That's good. That's good. If you weren't getting paid, would you still be doing it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we won't put that in there because your boss might hear it.
Thank you.
Yeah. If, do you do photography as a hobby as well on your own, or is it like, the last thing I want to do is pick up a camera. I'd rather just go read a book or walk in the park. And
well, I think for me, I definitely need some downtime, but that's not taking pictures. It's just downtime from the newspaper mm-hmm. world. I need downtime from that. Not for taking pictures, because, well, as you're even driving, you're like, oh, that's a yeah. great picture, but I'm going 80 miles
yeah.
an hour. I can't. It's terrible, isn't it? I mean,
that's
like
true.
Constant.
It's a curse.
Right.
It's a blessing. It's a curse, yeah. So what kind of things do you work on personally? Do you have, like, personal projects, travel?
Not at a level that I want to be at. I think working at a newspaper, it's so encompassing. It's overwhelming at times because you're on this constant deadline. Your hours are kind of funky.
Mm-hmm.
You get nervous about, I still get nervous about certain shoots, and so that your sleep patterns are off because you'll work late one night and early the next day. And,
mm-hmm.
And it's just this constant, it's this moving train that you cannot go backwards. You have to keep up on it because you can't really slow down, because it's just, next day's paper's out. It just keeps going and going and going. So you have to let things go.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, if you're in a situation, it's not working, maybe it just doesn't work that day, and you can't feel bad about that. And every day you're not going to come back with, like, these pictures that define you as a photographer. Sometimes you're just documenting,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay. That's okay.
So when you're working, working on an assignment, and you see something else, that might be great in your portfolio. I mean, you ever, like, turn around and shoot things just for yourself because, you got a few minutes and
mm-hmm.
and you just see something that's really cool and you want to capture it?
Yeah, you have to make that picture because, it will never happen again. And I try to do in every assignment that I do for the paper, I really try to make a picture for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I say make a picture, not take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
I think I really try. That's why I love to work in. I think working in like Los Angeles would be just a nightmare for me because everything is on such a big scale. And
you can't get anywhere.
You get right. but the people here are so real, and it's sometimes it's so small town. And what I love is just the absurdity and the mystery of a small town because people are so real here that they open themselves up to you. And so I found here that you can really take these absurd little moments and, you know, like a slice of life type of pictures that don't have anything to do with anything. But you saw it, and the composition was right, and the light, and it's just, you know, the beauty in everyday life to me is just... it's pretty wonderful. And I think a lot of other photographers would say this too. I think we see a lot of things that other people don't see
mm-hmm.
because they're like on Twitter or they're, you know, their head is
self-absorbed. Yeah.
Self-absorbed. Or they were talking about themselves on Facebook or something instead of, you know, actually just sitting. When was the last time you saw a person just sitting with... not a phone, not headphones, and just sitting and looking, you know? And I really think, you know, slow looking. I don't know how else to put it. But just...
that's a good term.
Actually, you know, looking at things slowly, you know? And that's why I think I really feel lucky what I do, because I have to slow down and let things happen. While I see the rest of the world running the opposite way with Twitter and posting and Facebook and Instagram and instant, where I think for every, you know, action, there's a reaction. And I think for me personally, I'm noticing that I want to do sort of the opposite, just sort of, explore... you know, more vintage photography, like the old mm-hmm. tintypes and the old, where it's just this whole meditative process to get, instead of, you know, 30 pictures of this or, you know, 10 cell phone pictures of the same thing, you know, so maybe to my detriment, that I personally am sort of, my interest lies more in going that way instead of this way.
That makes sense. It's funny, you were talking about older photos. We used to have a lab here in town. Down like office. This is in Cleveland, Ohio. Sorry. but they all they did was process black and white mm-hmm. silver film. I maybe you dealt with them. So I went down there. I had some film processed by mm-hmm. the guy brings out a photo. Looked like it was taken yesterday mm-hmm. of these women sitting around this living room, obviously the turn of the last century. He goes, can you believe what this looks like? I go, wow, it looks like you just took it. And it was a glass negative that somebody gave them from 1900. It was just amazing.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how everything looks so cool back then. You know, like people stand in front of their butcher shop outside
yeah.
and you're like, that looks so cool. I think the secret, because today nothing looks cool because, you know, you don't know how it's going to look historically. And I think a lot of the people I work with are very good at sort of seeing that and still identifying that this... is going to, I'm not saying this at all well,
no.
but to look cool, like later on, I mean, uh-huh. just for documentary sake. And that's part of, I think, that's part of the problem that I fear that if we're not documenting our everyday life, you know, in Cleveland or wherever, it's like, well, who's going to start doing that? I mean, I know we have cell phones and everything, but they're just taking pictures of themselves. Or the friends, or themselves again. And you know, are we all just going to disappear? You know, who else is going to write this stuff down? You know, I mean, how do we, if you think of a biography, how do they piece it together? Letters, old photos, letters. When, you know, when's the last time you wrote a letter? And so how are we going to piece together all these emails that nobody ever saves? And I mean, are we just disappearing? I don't know.
They're still there, but there's just so many. How can you find the right one?
Yeah, who's going to go through this?
That's why, you know, my wife's reading a book now, and a big part of the book are emails, the actual text of emails. It's pretty interesting. I got to read it when she's done with
it.
I can't remember the name of it. So, speaking of documentary, so we're going to get some advice from you for folks, because that was a question I had, because people go on vacation. So, by the way, a lot of people who are in our community want to create photo stories. They want to be, you know, take more of a documentary approach, but maybe don't know how to do it. So say someone's going on vacation to Paris. You know, of course, you're going to run around and take pictures of the Eiffel Tower and, you know, whatever. But how would someone go about maybe really documenting that story that they could pull out 10 years from now and really get a feel for what would you suggest they look to do? That's a big question, I know.
Yeah. Well, I think you definitely have to have a lot of patience. Every time I shoot something, there could be, if I'm working on a story, there could be weeks before, you know, or days that I don't get a good picture at all. You know, in fact, I'm always surprised when I do have a picture that I like. And that is storytelling, and I think the biggest thing is time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the biggest, the time you put into it.
Take the time,
yeah.
Slow down. Maybe it goes back to your previous point about just slowing down and looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think patience... not a lot of people have anymore, because it's just our lifestyle.
Yeah.
But you have to work. You definitely have to work at it. It's like, I don't know how, you know, and the other people I work with can probably back me up on this too. You spend time on something, a big chunk of time, and it just kind of never, it just never lends itself to, you know, the pictures that you really were really hoping for. And that's another part of this business, is that it can be very disappointing. You know, you put a lot of work into something, it just doesn't quite get there. And you have to work through that.
Yeah, because you can't always come up with the photo of the century, right? I mean, that's only going to happen once in a while.
I don't think that'll ever happen for me. But, you know, I don't know, sometimes I think... You know, I'm like the character actor of, like,
you know, really?
The newspaper photography business, because, you know, I'm not, I'm not going to, you know, win the Nobel Prize. I'm not going to
Why not?
Go overseas. Yeah, I'm not going to go overseas or anything, but I just keep at it. Day, you know, day in and day out. And I think a lot of the people I work with can really relate to that too. And it's just churning away, you know. And there's nothing, work as its own cure. You just have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
You certainly put in your 10,000 hours, right?
Maybe.
So in terms of your professional work, what's your favorite? Was it a story or individual photo?
Well,
what are you most proud of?
So everything moves so quickly, you can't remember yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I tell you, you know, there's a couple stories that I was quite attached to. One in particular was a few years ago. a reporter at the paper. She was raped on the job, actually, and she was the theater critic at the time. And so, you know, many, many years after, and nobody knew, mm-hmm. Many years after that happened, she decided it was time for her to find out about this guy. So anyway, it was sort of a survivor's journey, and mm-hmm. it was just a remarkable story. The inherent problem with this particular project was how do you illustrate a story that happened 20 years ago? And as Joanna Connors went on this journey to find out about the person who raped her, I followed along. And I wanted the pictures to be sort of ethereal and dreamlike, just like the nightmare she was trying to forget. So I wanted the pictures to have the same thread of style, like this sort of a haunting mood of melancholy. So just as some of her memories are faint, other parts of her memories are tack sharp and unforgettable. So I wanted the pictures to sort of have that feel. I don't know if I succeeded, but...
I think you have.
I think...
By the way, we're talking, we've got the newspaper open right in front of us, so you might hear the paper rattling around in the wind. So keep going.
Well, it was a difficult story. Not only it wasn't, you know, following the normal journalistic sort of storytelling, because it involved the reporter herself. But it was very different, and I'm glad that the newspaper supported us in telling it in a very different way, and they had published it in a special section, and I think it did a lot for the community, because Joanna did many speaking engagements on this, and people would come out of the woodwork saying, this happened to me 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, and I could never talk about it. But this piece helped me to say it out loud and to not be ashamed and not get the help I needed, especially. So I think this is the crux of what a newspaper can do for a community when it invests itself into a long-term project. And I think it helped a lot of women in Cleveland, and men, too, about being assaulted.
So, I mean, this is a big project. It's probably like 12, 14 pages, something like that. Mm-hmm. Would you see something like this being done today, just because of the scope?
I think the resources are stretched and limited for that, and I think the tolerance to let reporters have that kind of time to pull off something like this, I think that window is sort of narrowing. I not that they wouldn't do that before or in the future, but you know, a special section with no ads, you know, it's quite something, and that just says how much they were committed to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a lot of a lot of space, mm-hmm. a lot of resources. I guess maybe if it was about an NFL player, they might do it.
Right. 20 page.
20 page, that's right.
20 page. But, I think writers are really feeling it just as much as photographers are, because the writers, there are writers who really write, and there are reporters, too, but they get much less opportunity to really write, mm-hmm. and bury the lead and let it write itself as a because things are, what they want is shorter reads, because people have less time, especially online.
Yep.
You know, so I really feel for the writers, too, because they're the whole craft of writing, which I really respect because I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel for them because that's going away.
Do a lot of writers start, like, create their own blogs and things so they can do longer form work? Or I know you see a lot. Obviously, they write books. And
I don't know that for sure. Yeah, I don't know that. I know Joanna is actually turning it into a book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it should be out fairly soon, actually. So she after she wrote this, she just kind of worked on a larger, you know, a larger book. So. I'm very attached to this because I don't know when this would happen again.
Yeah.
Because some of the writers, you know, they're leaving. And so, you know, you have somebody with 30 years experience and they leave and such an institutional knowledge, leaving newspapers. And when you... And they're invested in their community. They don't just parachute in.
That's right.
And leave because these are our neighbors. We see these people again. We have to live with them. So it makes you accountable, makes you very fair in your reporting. And so let's say, you know, some other news organization just parachutes in for the Amanda Berry or whatever, and then they just leave.
Mm-hmm. Drive-by reporting, I guess.
Right. So... I think the Plain Dealer has a very good reputation because there are people, the reporters there have been here for years and years and years.
So do you have like a dream project, something you're just dying to work on if you have the time and... And the resources, or you just take it as it comes?
It's top secret right now, but...
That's fine.
Top secret, but okay. It's good to have something really personal that you almost jinx it if you were not able to pull it off. So.
Yes, I do, but if I tell you, I have to kill you.
Right, right. Or at least break your knees.
And take you, oh, that would hurt. No, don't do that. Don't do that. What about your personal work? Is there any pieces of your own, you know, personal work outside the job that you're really proud of?
Well, I kind of think it is all personal, you know. So I like I said, it's so encompassing. It's just so overwhelming, the amount of pictures that we take.
Yeah.
You know, but I think for me, more personal work is on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, as you grow as an artist, that you really have to start, you know, and most photojournalists will say this, is that, you know, you spend your whole life looking in at other people's lives. And so it's almost like you kind of, you know, put a back seat on your own life,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so it'd be kind of interesting for me to maybe make that a priority for once and start...
Good idea.
Taking on things that I've always wanted to explore, but it's a real time issue. It's a real time issue.
Yeah. How many hours do you work in a week?
Well,
hundreds of...
in my mind,
yeah.
Hundreds, but
well, that's true. I mean, a lot of people, when you're not there, you're still working,
yeah,
right? You're still thinking about things
because
you do so much problem solving.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's such an ebb and flow. It's become more humane, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regular work week, but you know, news happens all
weekends. Yeah,
right,
sure.
Right. So,
do you Do you ever have to fight to get something published? You know, you've got something you really feel strongly about that you have to go in and pitch it and get people's approval and...
You know, I would have to say that they are really open to a lot of ideas.
That's good.
Yeah, and they're pretty good about giving you time to work on things. So, if you have time and it is a good idea, they're all ears. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, now that we have less and less writers, where a lot of, you know, the story ideas came from them just because they're on certain beats. And, you know, we're on all beats. So we're just sort of this, you know, spectrum of things. So as there's less and less writers, then there's less and less story ideas kind of coming our way. So we in turn are, you know, are able to come up with more and more things that, you know, might be very visual, but maybe... not a long-term documentary type thing. So,
do you end up writing yourself as well?
You know, I think they want that a little bit more.
Sure, but, they want you to do everything.
Yeah, I need to grow another arm. But, you know, I didn't spend the last 20 years trying to be a writer either. So it's not, I mean, it's painful for me to do. I can sort of do it. But, you know, there's so many great writers, you know, who have been doing it for a very long time. So.
Yeah, it's like anything else. It doesn't come easy.
Yeah, it doesn't.
We had a big story break here in our market about a year and a half ago that a lot of people probably heard about, and that's the Amanda Berry story where, you know, this is, you know, for everybody's benefit. There are three women who were held captive by this guy for, what, 11 years or something like that. Did you... do any work on that? You talk about absurd. There are a lot of absurd things, I think, that kind of revolved around it. The guy who helped free them, who is just a character, absolute character.
Right. You know, I don't think that first night when it happened, I don't think, I think I was out of town, I think. So I wasn't initially on there, but it was such an ongoing story that all of us sort of pitched in and, you know, and after this Sowell murders, you know, I have friends all over the country, you know, calling, what's wrong with Cleveland?
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah. But, you know, and people from CNN were here for weeks at a time. But I almost grabbed my camera and ran down there myself that night. I go, well, this is crazy. I've got to get some of this. But I didn't do it.
Yeah, Cleveland is a very newsy town. I mean, there is. It's just very busy. Very, very busy.
So, Lisa, I really appreciate you being here today. It was very interesting, and I learned a lot. I'm sure everybody else did. Your photos are fabulous. And a couple questions before you go. Who's your biggest influence?
You know, I think for me, I'm not speaking for anybody else, but I think as an artist, you really need... an inspiration, a real person inspiration, the person sitting next to you, or, you know, real life people that you can talk about ongoing concerns about your own growth as an artist. And I think it's really important to find somebody in your everyday life that you can talk about that with, talk shop with, who gets you. And I'm not talking about going to a workshop and then you have people that you've never met before you know, critique your work. That has never really done anything for me. If some National Geographic photographer, no offense, they're wonderful, but they don't know me, and they, you know, it doesn't do any good for me to hear that from somebody I don't know personally.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and so I think it's really important, like, for me to find somebody that is trying to have a creative life but is challenged by all the other daily challenges in life, and how they get through that but still are able to be creative. And what does that person do to be creative on a daily basis? and on a long-term basis. And how do you do that? You know, where are your examples in your everyday life? So I think it's important to seek that out. And if you don't have somebody like that, it's just one person. It doesn't need to be a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
That you can sit down and just say, oh my God, I don't think I can ever make another good picture ever again. Do you ever feel like that? Yes. You know?
Of course.
Yeah, and I have that kind of, you know, how do you get through it? Or what do you, you know? And so that person for me is, you know, Andrea Levy, and she's an illustrator who we used to sit next to each other for years before mm-hmm. we moved to the new building. And she's been such a great mentor to me. I mean, she's, you know, she's more of an art, like an illustrator
mm-hmm.
type.
Still.
But a photo illustrator as well. But, you know, seeing her being at the top of her game through, you know, her trials of life, and she still does it. It's like, how do you do that? I mean, and it's just, you know, she has such grit and always fresh with ideas, and it's just stunning to see something, you know, somebody, a real person that lives in Cleveland who does that. And so, you know, I'm really grateful that we can have conversation. And another photographer at the Plain Dealer, Lynn O'Shea,
mm-hmm.
who she's been a photographer 30 years and still at it, and she's terrific. I mean, she's such a community photographer and just such like a great example of how do you do this long term? Like, how do you still love it, and how do you deal with you know, the insecurities of newspaper life and all that.
Everything,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, life's messy no matter what it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. But so I'm lucky. Yeah. I'm really lucky. It makes Cleveland really pretty special.
So do you fulfill that role for somebody else as a sounding board? Or maybe you do and you don't even know it.
You know, I have no idea. I really don't. Hopefully it's a little give and take.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, just our
Works
own tiny support group. But I think it's really important because, you know, there are some days if you don't have that person to call or something, like, I mean, it's, you know, if you're a creative person, it's, you know, I think a lot of creative people tend to go melancholy,
uh-huh.
you know, and I think it's just helpful to have a real person, not a person in a book. You know, I think Walker Evans is like a brilliant person, but it's not the same as talking to a person and having that other person knowing, you know, seeing your growth, or, you know, from a home, from a years of growth, like a spectrum,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I just think it's... That's really helpful, especially for women, I think, in this business, where usually, no matter what staff you're on, you're probably about one or two or maybe three women on that staff. So usually you automatically kind of form, you know, this inherent support group,
yeah.
you know, because it's just very different for women to do it long term, you know, so so I'm pretty lucky. Very, very good friends here.
Wow. It's great advice.
Yeah.
Great advice. So, how can people find you? I mean, I'm not asking for your address or
right.
anything.
Yeah. I'm supposed to be invisible.
You're invisible, that's
and
right.
And I'm supposed to disappear, which is just fine with me. A lot of... our work is on cleveland.com,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's probably the best way to find, you know, so, some of the work that I've done at the Plain Dealer.
So, yeah. That's right. So I think you've got a profile on there. We can link to that.
Mm-hmm. It should be there.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. when you do launch your own website, let me know.
Oh, thank you.
We'll change your profile on our site and put it in there.
Okay. Well, that's. I will take you up on that.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks again for being here.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Anytime.